Welcome, everyone. Today is October 8th, 2013, and we are here for the OOR development session, Meta-Ontology for Ontology Categories. My name is Michael Gruninger, and together with Till Masakowski, we will be chairing today's session. The motivation for today's session arises out of the challenge in a very large ontology repository of how to provide a little more structure when people are both contributing content to an ontology repository, but particularly when searching through an ontology repository. And if we look at, say, some of the other ontology repositories that people are using, such as BioPortal, they're often very kind of dedicated to particular domains. So in the case of BioPortal, we're talking about biomedical ontologies. But even so, they have some ideas on how to categorize the ontologies within their repository. And for an even larger, more open repository, this problem is even larger in magnitude. So today we'll focus on the idea of perhaps having coming to some kind of consensus on what kinds of ontology categories we want to have to structure the repositories that are participating in OOR. And we will be hearing, well, I guess, 1.5 talks. The first talk by Dr. Aleksandra Josic, Meta-Ontology for Ontology Categories. And then I will follow up with a few brief comments on ontology categories in Calore. Aleksandra, you're up.
I hope all of you have access to the slides that I uploaded, or Peter uploaded, and I will be following and noting every time when I switch to the next slide. So on the second slide, there is an outline of my talk today. First, I'm going to address some issues about the role of meta-ontology categories in the open ontology repository context. Then I will go through a few of examples of ontology repositories such as BioPortal, SOCOP, Colore, and OntoHub. Then I will try to sum up some issues about criteria as to how we can classify ontologies, especially regarding some reference ontologies such as OMV or LOLA. That is on its own ontology of an ontology that classifies languages, logic, and logics. In the end, I will focus on some issues about questions in order to open debate and the directions for possible action. So on the third slide, you can see an overview of importance of having meta-ontology categories in the OOR context. So besides giving a complete specification of an ontology, meta-ontology categories play several important roles in any of ontology repositories. Primary roles of categories are to organize ontologies into the collections and facilitate ontology retrieval. So in that sense, categorization of ontologies into repository directly impacts repository functionality, and it is also reflected through the user interface, as Michael already mentioned. Specific categorization of ontologies will influence criteria for browsing and searching for ontologies. And on the other hand, also the way of uploading ontologies and giving particular metadata and later on accessing metadata through the search browser. Related but no less important issues of why categories of ontologies are important is that they support and enhance exchange and advancement of knowledge. Such a smart grouping of ontologies according to tasks, types, or logics can allow novel interoperability scenarios among stored ontologies, as well as ontology reuse across different domains. However, an open issue is about questions, should we foster an agreement on the meta categories for classification of ontologies that should be accepted across ontology repositories. And on this slide, I sketch certain advantages and disadvantages of having common categories across ontology repositories. One of advantages of having such a common categorization is or rather to say ontology alignment, categories alignment, is that categories of ontologies can be interoperable across ontology repositories. They can be comprehensive, they can include various kinds of ontologies and enhance reusability. In that sense, ontologies that are stored in different domain-specific repositories, such as BioPortal or SpacePortal or Colore, can mutually exchange their content and increase possibilities to exchange represented knowledge. However, this advantage of such an approach might be too paternalistic, and it can impact specificity of categories that are very helpful for certain domain-specific repositories, such as, for example, BioPortal. That's reasonable to think about repositories that have and want to have specific categories in order to focus on their particular application. However, a disadvantage of independent categories in each of the repositories, open question of interoperability and reuse, because ontologies stay close within the community that is using one particular repository. On the fourth slide, I sketch certain issues related with Colore repository, but Michael will later on say something more about Colore categorization. In general, what you can see on this slide is how a user can search for ontologies and how they are categorized from a user's point of view. So this point is also related to previous discussions of user interface for ontology repositories presented by Daniel Kutovale some weeks ago. As we can see in Colore, from user's point of view, accessing and searching for ontologies is not so easy. Actually, access to the ontologies can be provided from different pages. First one is what you can see on the left side of the slide is the main page of Colore project. And here you can have you can find a list of more than 100 categories classes of ontologies that are then linked with the repository, and you can expand each of them and later on search for Colore specific categories that are oriented towards classification of logical theories. And you have you can find here also categories that are oriented to categorization of modules and parent ontologies. So unlike some other repositories such as BioPortal, you can find there categories such as parent ontology and child ontology, something similar like in the OntoHub, where parent ontology is an distributed ontology, which can contain other children ontologies. So an advantage of providing other kind of browsing is an access to the folders that are classified and structured in Colore repository, and this might be a more convenient side of searching and browsing for ontologies from a user point of view. However, when it comes to searching for particular domain ontology, if a user wants to find, for example, ontologies related to particular industry services or engineering, it's not so easy. It seems that this kind of categorization and searching tool is lacking in the Colore repository. On the fifth slide, you can see a snapshot of BioPortal interface with listed categories. Obviously, these categories are user-centered in a way that BioPortal designers know more or less what kind of ontologies people are searching for, how they are uploading them, and even if they seem like arbitrary chosen, they are probably decided according to certain needs of BioPortal community. However, while looking on the right side of the slide, you can see a list of the categories that are present at the browser user interface of BioPortal. This hierarchical structure I designed by retrieving XML file through NCBO REST service. And you can see that this categorization, if you, especially if you enlarge, if you have a PDF file and you enlarge it, you can see that on the same level, you have categories such as all organisms, then names of particular organisms, such as Arabidopsis, then cell, organism parts like cell, then upper level ontology on the same level, while certain categories such as gene and proteins are subclassified into gene products and proteins. So more or less from some structural point of view, this categorization doesn't seem like the best structured and organized. On the six slides, you can see a user interface of SOCOP categories that are classified by the list of categories proposed by Mike Dean and built on BioPortal technological infrastructure. So these categories are somehow better systematized than BioPortal categories. They are limited in size. They are very general, but even general, they are still domain specific. And in that sense, they are somehow arbitrary in limiting choices, posing also certain kind of uncertainty in categorizing subjects. So if a user is searching for some ontologies related to architecture or agriculture, from this list is not so easy to decide in which category he will or she will need to look for those ontologies. Nonetheless, this technological structure in BioPortal in SOCOB is enriched with possibility to upload metadata and in a way tag ontologies by certain topics. However, those kind of metadata doesn't seem to be mandatory in uploading ontologies, even if in principle they can allow and support easier search for ontologies. On the seventh slide, I sketch the current state of art in the work on OntoHub categories. I'm developing an OntoHub metadata ontology, and recently Christopher Lange joined the project on and work on metadata ontology, in particular regarding LOLA ontology, and which is one of the crucial points for the OntoHub technology. And actually, many of categories in the OntoHub repository are containing specific groups such as of ontologies, classifying them like distributed or single or basic ontologies, while distributed ontologies can be heterogeneous or homogeneous. Heterogeneous ontologies contain sub-ontologies or children ontologies that are formalized in different languages, while homogeneous ontologies contain ontologies that are written in a single language. That is another point when we compare different ontology repositories. We can see that many of existing repositories, with the exception of Golore, are focused on a single ontology language, and namely, that is OWL ontology. So, SOCOB ontologies and BioPortal ontologies are all OWL ontologies. That is also related to the technological infrastructure and OntoHub, which will soon be launched in its full functionality, has that advantage over some other repositories because it supports and provides storage, search, and management of ontologies written in different ontology languages. So besides OWL ontology, it can also include common logic ontologies and many other ontologies written in other ontology languages and formalisms, while also providing links among logical theories and mappings between the ontology languages. Regarding current state of this metadata ontology or meta-ontology, the meta-ontology of OntoHub contains like imports domain fields ontology, which is divided into a core ontology and an extension ontology. I have been working on development of these particular segments of the meta-ontology, and I will say something more on the next slide about this work. This meta-ontology also imports BioPortal metadata ontology designed by Natasha Noy, and it also includes OMV, ontology CHAO and Protégé mappings ontology. Domain fields ontology can be aligned with the existing BioPortal categories as well as SOCOB categories designed by Mike Dean, While LoLa integration should provide interoperability also with Colore categories, because it is particularly enriched with detailed and specific semantically rich categorization of ontology languages and logics. So in principle, LoLa and OMV categories can be aligned, in particular because LoLa, as I said, focuses on several of classes that are very important in the OMV ontology, such as ontology language, ontology syntax, formality level, knowledge representation paradigm. While OMV on itself has structure that is also very much OWL-oriented, LoLa will provide a more detailed and specific characterization of these categories. So open questions is the kind of alignment between OMV and LoLa, and Christoph Lange later on in the discussion will say something more about the issues. And I will say a couple of more words about classification of domain fields, and we can discuss later on about platform choices, to how we should and we can proceed to this categorization. And of course, we will discuss interoperability across ontology repositories regarding domain categories. So on the eighth slide, you have a list of all categories of the OntoHub domain specification or categories for domain ontologies. This domain field ontology is based on the international standard classification of education that is a member of the UNESCO family of classificatory systems. And it provides a comprehensive categorization of possible domains that one ontology can be about, or the field in which an ontology can be developed. I extended this ISCD classification with certain categories, in particular while looking at Mike Dean's classification. So this categorization also includes standard method and research technique, including like subclasses, standards, and characterization of methods and research techniques. I also added space, time, and process, which were lacking in the basic ISCD classification, and these categories are very very important for a certain domain such as space portal. In principle, the idea is to try to provide a certain core categorization of possible domains that can support structuring of ontologies according to a particular domain, while an extension of domain categories can be provided by a particular research community. So BioPortal community can expand categories related to biomedicine, Space Portal community categories related to space. And one important point is regards the way of searching and uploading, that means using of these categories. So these categories are not disjoint classes, and while browsing for an ontology and uploading an ontology, a user can choose more than one class. So one ontology can be about space, but also about geography, or it can be about space and about biology, if it represents some anatomical spatial or spatial organization. So on the ninth slide, you can see the main questions that we should ask and we do ask while classifying an ontology. One of the questions is, what is an ontology about? So what is the object of an ontology? However, that question is not isolated from other two questions. Why an ontology is designed for? What is the intended purpose of an ontology, and how that ontology is designed? All these three questions are mutually related, because even if one ontology is about a rabbit, so the object of an ontology is a representation of a rabbit, that ontology might represent a rabbit from different perspectives using different methodologies. And that perspective might be a perspective of a biologist who wants to model structural and anatomical representation of a rabbit. That kind of ontology will definitely be quite different from an ontology that a gastronomist wants to represent and the things he might say about a rabbit. So, one ontology, well, classifying an ontology, it doesn't matter only what someone wants to represent, but also how it's representing. In that way, specification of specific discipline-oriented perspective and methodology is also an important issue in classifying an ontology. The domain field ontology can support this kind of classification of ontology domains. Let's say something more about the existing ontology classification, such as OMV and LOLA. OMV is an ontology of metadata vocabulary. And it is an important segment of a bioportal metadata ontology, which also supports searching and uploading ontologies and characterizing ontologies according to ontology type. On the left side, you can see a list of categories of OMV properties of an ontology. Ontology type can be application ontology, core ontology, domain ontology, task ontology, and upper level ontology. Formality level in OMV can be specified as schema, taxonomy, terminology, thesaurus, and vocabulary. Knowledge representation paradigm in like predefined data properties are description logics, DAG, and frames that can describe an ontology. Ontology language in the basic OMV is specified mostly as OWL and RDF, while it might different other ontology languages can be added. And of course, LOLA will be very important in closer specification of several of listed classes of ontologies. Ontology task in OMV is specified as annotation task, configuration task, filtering task, industry task, integration, matching, mediation, personalization, query formulation, query retrieving and search task. Of course, this is not a final list. However, it does contain certain specification of different tasks. And OMV also contains specification of ontology syntax. As I mentioned, Christoph Lange will say something more about issues regarding the alignment of OMV and LOLA. An open issue is what should we do with ontology of ontology domains, or should we actually have one ontology of this kind, or should we have more of ontologies of ontology domains or none? So one of the options is to go for another way of categorizing ontology domains, not like an ontology, but more using something like COS platform. The related issues is, can the domain fields ontology as presented previously, like core ontology, can support interoperability across OR domains, so that the extension of core ontology can be left to the domain experts. And finally, I will open certain questions in order to continue discussion about the ontology categories. The first question is, should we foster a consensus on the meta-categories for classification of ontologies across open ontology repositories? Second question is, should a standardization of ontology metadata also include categories of ontology domains? And finally, what kind of actions we can propose? For example, establishment of a minimum of requirements for a meta-ontology that can provide interoperability across ontology repositories and their categories, so that open ontology repository community really wants to endorse such kind of categorization. On the last slide, you can find several references that can be useful for the discussion and future thoughts about categorization of ontology. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexandra. Great presentation. Beautiful slides. You mentioned during your talk that Christoph was going to be making some comments. Would now be appropriate time to do that? Particularly, I think it was with respect to
LOLA.
The categories with LOLA.
Yes, yes.
I'm Christoph. Should I quickly say a few things?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Cannot hear you.
Yeah, I guess go ahead and type in the chat then. In the meantime, Till, are you on the call? Or just in the chat?
I just unmuted you, Till.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, go ahead, because we started without you. So if there were any major comments you had to start off the call or any comments with Alexandra's presentation, you now have the floor.
Yeah, thanks. But I think at this time, no comments from my side. So, yeah, thanks, Alexandra, for the presentation. So, I asked Christoph to try to integrate LOLA, but this is not possible yet, but we will do this in the near future. So LOLA is a different ontology that we have created for OntoHub, basically consists of ontology languages. So there is a category for or class for ontology languages, for translations, types of languages, types of translations, and this stuff. So it would usefully complement the ontology that Alexandra has just presented.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll just have my brief slides, and then we can have a wide open discussion. One of our original ideas is to actually have every repository project kind of contribute kind of a response, if you will, to Alexandra's notes, but didn't quite work out that way. But I'll be giving a response, say, from the Calore perspective. Unfortunately, we couldn't get anyone from SOCOP on today's call. So if you go to my slides, again, this is just the Calore perspective. So that's all it is. So on slide two, for me, I see the challenge as kind of addressing these two questions. And one of them Alexander raised, you know, what is a particular ontology about? And effectively, how do we describe the content of an ontology? And we're looking at this, you know, both from the perspective of the ontology designer, being able to describe what their ontology is about and what the content of the ontology is, but I guess primarily from the ontology reuser perspective. I kind of maybe want to use that term there. People aren't really ontology users. Sometimes I think they're ontology reusers, and how can we support that reuse? And the idea, I think, is that by having ways of describing the content of an ontology, that is kind of one of the primary ways that people actually find an ontology that then they could possibly reuse. So if we go to slide three, what we're doing within Calore is trying to categorize ontologies, I guess, by two ideas. One is based on logical properties, and the other is on some intuition of genericity, the idea that there are some very mathematical ontologies, and then you specialize those to different domains and generic domains, and finally to some very specific domains. So that's what my next few slides will make brief comments on. So on slide four, from a logical perspective, within Calore, we classify ontologies by properties that are related to how people merge ontologies to form new ones. And so in various previous work that we've done, there's this idea of reducibility, that there are a lot of ontologies such as PSL and Dolce that we've already looked at, some of the time ontologies, OWL time, that really what you can do is you can say that these ontologies are composed of other ontologies. And we use this as a way of characterizing the models of the ontologies and doing the verification. But it also shows reducibility is a very strong form of reusability. Essentially, what it means is you can take any model of the theories that you're in the reduction and you can combine them to form a model of your ontology. There's a slightly weaker notion called weakly reducible, which actually was introduced in our Foy's paper 3 years ago. It means you can merge the ontologies, but you also need some bridge axioms in order to support the merging. So with reducibility, you don't really need any merge axioms. The mappings take care of everything. But with weakly reducible theories, you actually have to provide some bridge axioms in order to show how the theories are combined. And there's an even weaker notion of decomposable ontologies. And finally, there's this idea of non-decomposable ontologies. And there's a conjecture that we have that basically all the ontologies we have can be constructed from these non-decomposable ontologies. So if we move to slide five, so many ontologies within Calore currently are axiomatizations of classes of mathematical structures. And we've done this because we use these to actually do verification of other ontologies. But a lot of the other work that's been done within the repository has been aimed at generic ontologies for time, process, space, shape, geometries, and things like this. So kind of concepts that you might typically, say, find in an upper ontology. And so on that, I see that the beautiful slide that Alexandra showed earlier about Calore, which I'm very jealous of. There, she showed a brief snippet from, say, the homepage for Calore. I'm just pasting another URL in the chat. And if you go to that URL, it's a slightly different way of organizing the hierarchy. So on the main page, it's just a kind of a listing of all the hierarchies. And again, a hierarchy is a set of ontologies that all have the same signature. So if you're asking what is an ontology about, indirectly, it's you're kind of responding by saying, well, this ontology has you know, a particular ordering, say, relation over time points, you know, for example. So on that link that I just pasted into the chat. So you'll see this breakdown into, let's say, the non-decomposable ontologies. And so these are related to ordering, graphs, different kinds of algebras, and orderings in terms of like betweenness orderings, and things like that, but also, let's say, linear orderings. And then there's a set of decomposable ontologies that are related to algebra. There's a larger set of weakly reducible ontologies. Again, ontologies where you have to specify some bridge axioms when you're doing the merge. And then below that, you see all the various generic ontologies. So all the different ontologies of time, that we have. So DTV is the date-time vocabulary. Ontologies for space. So this is a lot of, mirror topology work. Ontologies for shape, process and geometry. And then some of the upper ontologies, particularly Dolce, that we've analyzed. And then way down at the bottom there are some of the domain ontologies that we've looked at, computer vision, enterprise modeling, and some other more specific domain process ontologies. So if we go back to the slides, the last slide I have here, slide 6, now is kind of saying, well, what about this domain? What about all these domain ontologies? And this is what I think was the kind of the focus of a lot of Alexandra's presentation. So we can maybe come up with logical criteria. Well, we can definitely come up with logical criteria for the mathematical ontologies. And we think we can have these logical criteria for the generic ontologies, again, like, you know, time and space, et cetera. But when you look at the domain ontologies, it's not really clear how we can structure those. And Sal and Sandra's done some great work in trying to bring some structure to all this mess. So one of the efforts that we're initiating within Calore is trying to do a big push in terms of providing richer axiomatizations of a lot of the domain ontologies that people are using. This is a list of the ones that we're investigating. So good relations, FIBO, Scribe is the IBM ontology for smart cities. Looking at some of the spatial relationships, say, within foundational model of anatomy, looking at the process ontologies within BioPACS, the biochemical pathways ontology, looking at units of measure, which actually we'll be hearing about that later this week in one of the ontology-based standards ontolog sessions. That will be the topic there. Looking at ontologies that people use on the web for addresses, there's about 6 or 7 different address ontologies, and kind of figuring out, like, you know, what are those all about? Ontologies for products, and like I said, I already mentioned some for computer vision and enterprise modeling. So this is kind of where we're going, and so our philosophy is kind of addressing these questions of, you know, what is an ontology about, and how do you describe the content of ontology, but from more of a bottom-up sort of way. So instead of identifying maybe a meta-ontology now and seeing how things fit, to maybe look at it from bottom-up and to say, let's start with this vast zoo of domain ontologies and try to abstract away from that the different kind of properties. So that's kind of where things are in response to in respect to Calore. And I think now we can just open up wide open discussion on everything that we've talked about today so far. Todd, go ahead.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you a lot, Alexandra. It's very interesting work. But I want to get back to the premise. What is the problem we're trying to solve? And I'm asking this question in the context of OOR and perhaps OntoHub in Calore. What is the problem we're trying to solve? And is there this absolute need to have this rigorous classification? Or relative to the problem we're trying to solve, can we get away with something sloppier? Or is there a need for a I hate to use the term hierarchy, but multiple paradigms should be used to solve whatever the problem is we think we're going to solve.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'll let Alexandra respond. I'll have a response, then we'll have everyone respond, because I think your question is kind of really central to, like, all of OOR. So, Alexandra, do you have any comments on Todd's question?
So, I agree with the idea that having a kind of strict and predefined categorization of domains is not the best possible solution, but actually it might be the best possible, but I don't believe that this categorization that I developed based on the UNESCO standard classification is a final classification. However, it does propose, in a way, comprehensive way of classifying domains, even if I believe that certain changes and extensions should happen in future. So it is just a kind of convenient tool to group and order existing domains of ontologies. Another proposal that Christoph Lange suggested to me yesterday is to try to organize these domain categories into SCoS platform. And Christoph might say something more about, if he manages to connect, he can say more about this possibility. This possibility would be much more open to adding new possible domains.
So again, what is the problem that we're trying to solve?
Okay. One of the main problems I can see here is should we have a categorization of domains that can be should be accepted across ontology repositories, so that can provide easier interoperability and user-friendly search, retrieval, and management of domain ontology.
Yeah, and I would kind of follow up. One of the main reasons for this work would be to support better ontology reuse. So if somebody says, hey, I need an ontology of, I need an address ontology for, you know, because I'm doing some e-commerce work and I need to deliver packages, you know, so I need an address ontology. Well, how do you search the repository for that kind of idea? Because, you know, they're not going to have, they might not have that name. And so how do you describe then what all these different ontologies are about? So then you can kind of get this more content-based retrieval. Once you do that kind of reuse.
So that's search, but actually you were actually talking about a notion called findability. And what I've learned from the Enterprise Search Gang is that there's two, the findability and search are two different tasks, shall we say, mm-hmm. with different intent. So I assume we have to support both of them.
I would say, yeah.
Okay, now I know you had mentioned the one about the intent of reuse, and hence that sort of findability. You know sort of what you're looking for, and you have a way to structure it. And the other one is just sort of general search. Now, certainly having a very fine-grained categorization would help the findability case, but the search case gets a little fuzzier, and that's why I suggested maybe a use of multiple paradigms, as John Seller likes to say, would be more useful, to be able to drill down from something fuzzy when you're just searching down to something more specific, in which the categorization would come into play.
Okay. Peter.
My question is for Alexandra or whoever else knows the answer. Are most of the categorizations presented as like a hierarchical structure? Meaning, I mean, for example, in BioPortal, when you upload, you have to assign a category. I mean, you probably cannot assign multiple categories to your ontology. Is that the case, or in general, multiple categorization is allowed in most of the implementations now? And Michael showed us a sort of different aspect of how he categorizes, but is that an exception, or is it generally, I mean, you allow when you upload an ontology, you make the normal categorization, and you also make the categorization whether it's decomposable, reducible, and so on?
Okay, so regarding categorization during the upload, user can specify domain that is not listed in the predefined categories on the user interface while browsing an ontology category. However, this kind of domain category will not be imported into the main category list for browsing, but it will stay just as a part of metadata that describes an ontology. In the OntoHub, the categorization can be although domains can be multiple and the user can select more than one category. Regarding the search issue, Daniel Kutovale has designed a search tool that can search at the same time for different options for different domain categories, for adding additional criteria of search such as a specific task or a specific symbol. So as more specific you define your search criteria, you can reduce the scope and the list of ontologies that are about that you want to find. No? So I hope Daniel can say something more about technical issues and what is supported by his search engine.
Yeah, I assume what you just mentioned is refers to OntoHub, the OntoHub
exactly
implementation.
Yes.
Thank you.
Other comments, particularly say in response to Todd's question from other people. I think it's definitely like an issue when you have a repository that really has more than a dozen ontologies, or if you basically, because that's where you can't really have this, no one person have this big picture of everything that's in the repository. And so there, I think there is this need to have this kind of structuring. Go ahead.
So I think Daniel says he would like to make a comment.
Oh, excellent.
Search and findability.
Yeah. On the problem of search and findability, there is also one minor issue, which is the promotion of your own work. So when a person publishes an ontology or any material, one of the goals of the person is to make this content reachable, and not only reachable, but easily findable, or if possible, promoted in some kind of way. So the steps of classifying this content might be understood as positive if it's clear for the person publishing that making such classifications in the way that in a non-cheating way would put their work in a better position. So I think that on the question of interfaces and what can be done from a user point of view, the question of annotating the data and the question of finding data through annotations are two very different questions. When annotating, it's very difficult to have keywords and to have and to know what are that the other people usually use in order to find what they want. So giving hints to the person who is annotating what are the most likely search terms and what are the most likely fields on the search side might be a way of providing a better annotation. And on the other side, giving suggestions about what are inside of the content that the person can retrieve might lead the person who is searching towards the content in a better way. So there are these two sides that work in completely opposite ways. Does it make sense what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, it sounds good.
Yes, it does. And this gets back to perhaps we need to use multiple paradigms, not just one.
I think there's another set of issues that are kind of popping up in the chat. So, for example, Pat was saying how, it could also be important to specify how an ontology is used. It's used in some applications, and if so, which. And so I think this might start kind of moving over into that other framework that came out of an early ontology summit, right, the ontology usage framework, which also had some connections with some OMV metadata. So OMV also had different classes of tasks for which an ontology supports. So, this does kind of blend into the larger issue of kind of ontology metadata in general. I think today we were focusing not just on like all of metadata. We've had earlier sessions on that, but primarily on this kind of the idea of the describing ontology content in a richer way. That again, as this discussion has gone on, to support more, better search and findability or discoverability, as Peter's just saying.
Yeah, I agree that the main topic is not just the domain field, but in general the question of metadata of ontology. So this usage is also covered in the OMV ontology by the task of the ontology. So my question also would be how close should we stick to OMV, or should we take this more freely and say our metadata ontology can deviate from OMV and just take OMV as an inspiration?
But this actually came up in a call, I can't remember how long ago, but I think maybe one of the last ontology metadata sessions within this OOR series. I think one of the ideas was if we really are talking about coming up with a ontology metadata ontology, it's kind of interesting, application of ontology reuse. So to say, what is it about OMV that we can reuse, but what is it, say, that we disagree with? And the idea would hopefully say to be able to say that if we could do a modularization of OMV, then we'd be able to say, well, we are reusing exactly the following modules of OMV, but there's some divergence on some other concepts within OMV. So the idea, to treat this exercise as an ontology design and reuse project with respect to OMV. And I think, some of this was going to be driven by kind of use cases. I think some of the work that's been presented today can serve as criteria for which we can evaluate whether or not OMV is adequate for us to reuse. And again, if it's not, then, can we extend it in some way without changing it? Or as you were saying, is there some aspects we actually have to change, say, that we would disagree with, would be inconsistent with what we want to see? But I think that was one idea that came out of a recession, but I don't think we really went anywhere with that. I'll have to look back in our old notes, old minutes, and find that that decision.
Okay, we'll have a look at that. So I think in most cases we can follow OMV, but there are certain corners where we explicitly want to deviate from OMV.
Right.
For example, you can have only one license model, and so OMV explicitly excludes dual licensing, and that doesn't make sense from my point of view, but that's just a minor detail, and there are lots of such things there.
Right. So the idea would be to say find the maximal sub theory of OMV, which we agree with, and then build an extension of that. And that way it's clear exactly, you know, what the relationships are, rather than trying to come up with something and then, you know, doing a posteriori mapping to really kind of say, well, you know, what in OMV do we agree with? What do we disagree with? What is incomplete? What needs to be extended? And what's the nature of the extension? So, for example, you know, it could be the case that the extensions that we propose are consistent extensions with OMV. But again, as you were saying, there are certain aspects that we don't adopt, we disagree with, but it would be a very clear relationship as to what is getting reused. So I guess that could be a topic for an upcoming session later on, either this or late this year or early next year, where we actually do that. So that could be like a ontology hackathon, if you will, where we're kind of brainstorming on this issue of what extensions of OMV do we need, and what in OMV is kind of inconsistent with what we need. But this also harkens back to Todd's point about, you know, why are we talking about this? So there's some implicit requirements in all of this that maybe we need to also make a little more explicit. It's kind of all, you know, implicit in what Alexandra presented, what I presented, but we need to make that a little more explicit in terms of the requirements on an extension or modification to OMV. Other comments from people?
Peter.
Go ahead, Peter.
So, as I put on the chat, I can see that we have sort of a two-pronged problem. One which we have been addressing all this time is the OMV, or I mean, what is the metadata that we need to include to classify the ontology. The other one actually is maybe the more interesting one, actually, is the user interface issue. I mean, how to get the right ontology, present the right ontologies to a user who really wants to just look at a certain group and not a million other ones, or narrow down the search and those kind of things. So I think they are actually two totally different issues that and it might be helpful to address them separately.
Hello. May I make a comment?
Yes, go ahead.
So, in while creating the search mechanism that I've created for OntoHub, we counted on the data that we had in the database in order to retrieve the content that we wanted. So we created an index to ontologies based on symbols, logics, and other entities that were saved inside of the ontology, inside of the database. So depending on the metadata that we are storing, and on the on how useful this metadata is for locating a particular ontology, we might get different results for search and for other properties such as for annotation, a better or worse annotation, we depend on the data in order to make these search mechanisms. And on the other hand, the search mechanisms that we could create with the data are different. So I'm going to give an example, a very precise example. In order to find a particular symbol or a particular term inside of our database, we could offer to get to this term based on the logic of the ontology in which this term appears, or based on the name of the ontology in which this term appears. But doing so makes very little sense in the user perspective. So, but while searching for ontology, we having the information that a certain symbol is inside of the ontology, and that the ontology is written in a particular logic, might be useful for a user to search, let's say, an OWL ontology, or let's say a description logic ontology in that has the concept of melanoma. So what I'm trying to say is that depending on what we decide to be our meta ontology, what we will afford or reduce the capability of both our search mechanisms and of our annotation mechanisms. Make sense?
Yeah. So the annotation aspect would be where the metadata comes back in. So I think, like, as Peter was saying, there's two issues, but I think we maybe are intentionally merging the two by having a kind of a metadata driven UI. I think that's kind of something that maybe is for future discussion.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Any additional comments? We had a great turnout today. Torsten, go ahead. You might be muted, *7.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was just wondering whether for some of the aspects that we're talking about, for example, the domain or how it is used, is actually using a formal description, like a formal ontology, for those categorizations is a little bit overkill, that it would be better to just use like a tagging mechanism, because those things like domains are intrinsically vague and not clear cut, so people would come up with so many different categories, for example, domains or users, that it's not really clear how it can be organized into a formal ontology.
Yeah, I think that's kind of one of the other issues that's kind of here is, the requirements on, if there is such an meta-ontology, what are kind of the requirements that we're imposing on it? I mean, is this something that has to have some notion of completeness, or is it, like you're saying, more kind of simply a set of tags that people have come to some kind of consensus about and say maybe users of a repository would need to subscribe to. I think I think it's kind of the big open question here is how formal such a meta-ontology would need to be. And it may be the case, like you said, that it simply is a set of tags that we all agree to.
Tags, we could like leave it open-ended that people can add their own tags and use the tags that are there, and it doesn't have to be a closed set of tags.
Right, so it's like a folksonomy, more of a folksonomy than more
especially,
rigorous ontology.
Especially if we're only talking about finding ontologies and helping users to navigate them, it might be better to just have like a topic map of it, or just a map of all the different tags and how frequent they appear.
Right. Yeah, and I guess that's sort of like a bottom-up approach as well. So just see how are people actually describing ontologies that they're building or that they're looking for. Pat, go ahead. You might need to use *7 to unmute. I'm not sure.
Hello?
Go ahead, Pat.
Okay, good. I want to expand a little bit more on what Peter said about the two issues, the user interface and the metadata. We're discussing, all about the ontology to describe our ontology repository. But I would imagine that the structure and the content of the ontology would be highly dependent upon the user interface that's going to use it. and this is where I'm a bit curious. Do we have in mind already a specific user interface that this ontology will be used for? That was my question.
I think things are kind of going in parallel. I mean, there have been several sessions here that have talked about the user interface, but I think it always kind of gets kind of wrapped up with the way that ontologies are being described and structured in the repository. I think maybe Peter's comment earlier is maybe we need to be disentangling that. But we seem to be kind of going in that direction of kind of having an integration between the two. Daniel, go ahead.
Okay.
So going back to the question that the previous question about getting not the question but a suggestion of having a folksonomy or a free set of labels that users come up with for tagging their own ontologies. I do not know how often you have implemented systems that have free tags. What usually I've seen, especially for user side, of people who are posting or publishing the ontology, is that users get confused, and they don't know what are other people likely to search for when trying to get their ontology, and even if they are confident. When we are confronted with data of what people do search for, this confidence is usually biased and it's not going to be to reach the correct term that people try to search for on open search. We can reduce this problem by showing how often other terms are inside of the database and how often terms are searched for in the web, in this website. But I really don't know how. Let me put it another way. If we go for this folksonomy and preset, the kinds of searches and the kinds of information that we are able to offer is already restricted to in one direction. We can also go for the other direction and having more control, and then we have other options and less options in this direction. So the interface that we are presupposing for the users will allow or not allow the choice of using a folksonomy or a folksonomy. Does it make sense?
Yeah, I don't think we're making any decisions today. I think this is maybe an issue that we've identified today, so we need to have a further discussions about it. You make some very good points there.
Yeah. So that the point that I'm trying to say is that the interface, that the kind of interaction that we are expecting for the users with the website will be decided not only by the scheme or by the actual components of the interface, but also by the decisions that we make in such case by using a free set of keywords or a closed set, or by making extensions or not, and those are things to keep in mind, I would say.
Yes, try to capture some of that in the chat so we can have that, because I think that's an important thing we want to be referring to in future sessions. So if you can capture it in the chat, then we'll have something to remind us. Christoph, go ahead. Yeah, you're still coming through very static.
Okay.
Yeah, you might have to type directly into the chat. Okay, so yeah, SCOS would be if going down this route, then SCOS may in fact be something to consider. So yeah, I think this is all kind of feeding into this idea of having a future metadata session kind of oriented around this particular set of this specific issue. Any other comments? Okay. So Peter, so we agreed that there wasn't going to be a OOR session next Tuesday. But did you want to talk about what's going to happen the weeks after, on the 29th, I guess?
Maybe I'll ping Till and Ken offline.
Okay.
Since we still have a couple of weeks to
right.
to worry about to mull over this issue. So any of the hardcore OR folks, Michael, Till, Todd, Ken, and so on, if you have topics you want to drive on the October 19th, the 29th date, please let's discuss offline.
Okay. All right. So I think that wraps it up for today. Again, thank you very much, Alexandra, for a great presentation. Thank you for everyone contributing in the chat. The chat will, even though we'll draw off the call now, the chat will stay open for a little bit longer to capture everyone's thoughts. Like I said, if there are other things that you had said earlier or maybe didn't get a chance to say, capture that in the chat so then we can refer to it in the future. So on behalf of Till Moskowski and myself, Michael Gruninger, thank you everyone for participating. And this will definitely feed into some future work within OOR. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.